Thank you. No fires. So if this talk incites you to fires, don't do that, right? So I may, some kind of rebellion might happen after this, we'll see. Right, so Control-Alt-Defeat, the big AI pushback. I am a professor of AI and society at King's College London. It is my job, amongst other things, to look at how society is being impacted by AI. And this year, very recently, we ran a survey about it because we were seeing lots of headlines saying that there was, you know, commencement speakers being booed at US graduations and things being set on fire, and you know, the uptick of AI wasn't very good within companies. So we wanted to see what it was like in the UK. Now, I've been coming to EMF camp. It's been 10 years since the first time I was at EMF camp. And the last lot of it, every single one so far, I've talked about sex robots. I'm not talking about those today. I'm really sorry. They don't come up at all. I'm really sorry. Maybe next time, right? So this is going to be violence rather than sex. So anyway, not really. But I'm also going to need audience participation. So in a moment, we'll get to that. Right, so first of all, ChatGPT was released in November 2022. And very, very quickly spread. And within 16 months, most economies worldwide had access to ChatGPT. So this uptick was just really, really rapid. I mean, within a week, they'd reached 1 million users, and it just kind of snowballed from there. And now OpenAI are claiming they have like a billion weekly users, active users. So as you might expect, news coverage has also dramatically increased. The red arrow marks the point where ChatGPT was released, and you can see all of the headlines that followed that. Well, of course, the headlines at the start looked a bit like this: we're all going to die. So it was very much, you know, AI is an existential threat. It's the end of humanity. Now, AI has been around for ages. You know this. We are at a tech festival. You know that AI as a discipline has been going since the 1950s. I have it in my job title, and it used to be fun, and now it's not because everyone hates it. So, you know, we have lived with AI for many years. It's behind the scenes in all of the things we take for granted, like Google Maps, like recommender systems, lots of different things. So specifically, generative AI has got people exercised, and for good reason. So, you know, it's like an academic weapon of mass destruction. Actually, I maybe sort of agree with that. Big tech execs playing Russian roulette in the AI arms race. So the narrative around this is very pessimistic. It's all about how things are going to go terribly, terribly wrong. And then when this happened, so there was a big scramble of all these companies to release their models to the public, which is a really stupid idea in the first place. I mean, have you met the public? They're awful. They're not awful. But you know, the ChatGPT had been rolled out, so of course everybody else wanted to roll their models out too. And we're sending open letters. People were writing these letters going, we must have an AI moratorium. We must pause. I thought that's very convenient if you work for a tech company who's got their model out there and you go, well, we must pause now, just while we have the competitive edge. Of course, no one paused. It kept going on and on and on. And the industry is enormous, right? This is way bigger than the dot-com boom. It's huge, absolutely vast. Stupid-sounding amounts of money, trillions. Well, I can't even conceive of what a trillion is like. So that was then. So how have the headlines changed today? The headlines now say things like AI tools could be bad, or guardrails aren't working, or Mythos is going to hack everything and destroy everything you love. Or my personal favorite here from the Telegraph, Pope invokes Gandalf as he issues AI warning. Yes, that's the Pope turning to the other good book to say we must learn a cautionary tale from Lord of the Rings. So if the Pope's involved, gosh, he must be doing something right or wrong. The Vatican's actually been involved in looking at AI ethics for a number of years. They had the Rome call that went out a few years back. So they keep an eye on it. But what was interesting, if you wade through the 45,000 words of the Pope's latest encyclical, and I got through about 33,000 of them before I thought I sounded a bit samey, if you read through that, you'll find that the main thing's happening is the Pope saying, well, we can't leave it up to the tech bros. And all of us academics have been saying that for ages. Of course you can't leave it up to the tech bros. But what the Pope also was saying was, I think we, the arbiters of morality, it is the Catholic Church, we should be in charge. No. So why don't people, what are they worried about? Why are people unhappy about this? Well, it's things like this. It's the hidden labor in the supply chain. It's people behind the scenes who are making AI happen, because one of the dirty secrets about AI is it's not really that artificial. It's people behind the scenes doing things like moderating content that's really, really graphic, horrible, violent, sexual images that the AI has flagged to them and they need a human to check it. And of course, that is outsourced to the Global South, to people who are being paid a tiny amount of money with no support to go through these kind of horrific images. It's an AI chatbot that turns out to be 700 engineers in India, because it turns out that's a more effective way to run your call center. Just use people. And it's things like data centers and a form of environmental colonialism where they're plonked down in other people's areas, right? You don't find a data center in the backyard of a tech bro. They all go to poorer areas and they use varying amounts of water, but they need clean water to operate. They have different ways of cooling them, but a lot of them will require that initial clean water to run them. And a huge amounts of energy, to the point where the tech companies are buying up nuclear power stations to power the data centers, which, you know, could be nuclear power by a different way, could help. We'll see. And then we've got headlines like this, right? Driverless taxi vandalized and set on fire in San Francisco's Chinatown. This is a couple of years ago. And it turns out that self-driving cars are really easy to hijack. And I've got to stop sounding so delighted when I say that. But it turns out if you stick like a traffic cone on the bonnet, it gets really confused and just stops. And if a lot of people are crowding around a self-driving car, it's been taught not to run people over, so it stops. So you have these basically ripe for the picking. Why they particularly burnt this one, people are unsure. There was a campaign going on about safer streets. It may have been part of that. But roll on a couple of years, and it's people hijacking them and burning them because they're rioting about other things. There are anti-ICE protests, for example. So it's just a handy way of being able to riot. Closer to home in the UK, the government put out a consultation late last year, and it said, tell us what you think about people's work, copyrighted work, being used to train AI models, because we think we should give them to the tech companies to train their models on. And 11,250 people went, no, not happening. They stole that from us, and we want to be properly compensated, which is fair. So this is one example of where, really, really rare, I think it's only ever happened once before, where every single newspaper in the country, including online, had the same cover the day the consultation closed, saying make it fair as part of a campaign. Because journalists also know that, you know, their jobs are at risk. So back to this survey. We decided to do this survey, and so before I start, there's some audience participation required, so I want to test the temperature of the audience. So I'm going to ask if you're positive, negative, or mixed feelings about AI. So if you're positive about AI, can I have a woo? Woo! Oh, ooh, interesting. Okay, if you're negative about AI, can I have a ooh? my people. If you're mixed, can I have a meh? Yeah, that's what I thought. That bit held. Okay, so that's what we find with our survey. It's really, really, really mixed. Here's a little bit about the methodology. So the survey was carried out last month between the 12th and 15th of June, and it was carried out by asking 2,055 people across the UK. That's a pretty standard size for a survey to test the weight of feelings in the UK. So 2,055 people, and it was across the four nations of the UK. So everyone, even Northern Ireland, my home country, was asked. And normally people leave that off because it's so small, it's barely significant. So that was nice that we included them. The data were all weighted to be representative of the population. Now, the bit that we got stuck on for ages was, how do we ask people about AI? What do we mean by it? Because we were really interested in how people conceived AI and what their whole perception of it was as a thing. And we wanted specifically to ask about LLMs, so the wording we used was the term artificial intelligence tools, sometimes called AI tools, for example, ChatGPT, Claude, Gemini, Copilot. Now, this does not fit nicely into what I think AI is. I think AI is an infrastructure, I think it's an ecosystem, I think it's a pipeline from raw materials through to output. I think it's lots of these things, but I also wanted to know what people thought and how they're classifying it, because when they push back against AI, they're not pushing back against these tools. They're pushing back against something else that they can't quite put their finger on. And it's all tied in with a bunch of other stuff like power, geopolitics, what's happening on their land, how much control they have. But we just asked about tools. So what we did find, this is the kind of what we thought might happen, AI is perceived more negatively now than it was 2 years ago. So there was a survey 2.5 years ago. There was a survey that ran in late 2023. And the negative responses to AI, people now think there are more risks than benefits. It wasn't by much, but it is declining. And that's interesting because it's been embedded for quite a while now. It's being pushed dramatically by schools, universities, the government especially, see it as a big economic growth factor. So all very pro-innovation. They put out a skills page so you could skill yourself with some courses that it's scraped from somewhere. So that was interesting. Will AI benefit you in particular? And that's where we start to see some interesting differences. And we decided to look at generations, because we know there is generational difference in attitudes. And so, as you might expect, Gen Z thought that they would benefit the most. They would have see positive benefits from AI, and the boomers didn't. They were quite against it. When our comms team put out the press on this, they said, oh, Gen Z and millennials like AI, boomers hate it, and all the Gen X, me included, were like, you've forgotten about us again. We're just a forgotten generation. No one ever cares what we think. We were third. We also asked, and this was a repeat of a question previously, we also asked people to select words that corresponded with their emotions around AI. And yet again, this is the same as the survey, earlier survey, the most common choice was nervous. And okay, you get other words, you get hopeful, you get afraid, you get confident and excited, but nervous was still coming out top. Interesting, because have people not seen that it's less scary than those headlines first suggested? You know, we're seeing different headlines now. We're not seeing end of the world type stuff anymore. When you look at it again with the breakdown, you find that Gen Z are selecting words that are much more positive about AI, and it's possibly not the easiest thing to read on this screen, but essentially the towards the right is the positive and the left is the negative. So blue words are those with positive sentiments and red are those with negative sentiments. So Gen Z and millennials, both fairly positive in their word choices around AI. Gen X, more negative. Boomers, weirdly, you know, it's the boomers. I said, I shouldn't slag off, but I'm not slagging off boomers. My parents are boomers. But it is the boomers who are sharing lots of the AI-generated imagery, like my mother, who will send me pictures and go, look at this dog doing this really cute thing, and like this AI mother, you know. So, but yeah, still very nervous and anxious about it, despite sharing all these memes. Yes, it's Jesus with the refugee mother, yeah. Okay. We asked people if they limited their AI use. And this surprised me. 42% of people said they deliberately limited their AI use, and that included people who people who use it every single day. So even if you are a regular user of AI, even if you are in Gen Z, and in fact, especially if you're in Gen Z, you're more likely to limit your AI use. Well, this doesn't really track, because all along, the government's been telling us, oh, if people don't use AI, it's because they don't know how to, so we're going to skill everyone, and we're going to invest millions in skilling. Well, it turns out that you can do that if you like, but the people who are using it and know how to use it also limit it. 42% limiting deliberately their AI use. And when we asked them for one single reason, I thought it would be the ethical concerns, you know, the environment, or it's exploitative, or I don't like big tech, but it wasn't. It was privacy and security. That was the top reason why people wanted to limit their AI use. And a close second was, I prefer to keep doing my work the way I always do it. So, fearing change. Fair enough. This stuff doesn't always work the way you want it to. So that was quite surprising. So what we found was this real mix of things. It wasn't a simple, straightforward picture. And it's not that easy thing where if you just give people the tools, they will use them. In fact, people who have the tools and use them also don't really like it. And I think we asked people to do free comments on this, and this one kind of sums it up. So this person said, I use AI an awful lot, and I find it very useful. However, I do fear that if not regulated very stringently, there's a danger to its usage. I don't think we can get away without using it now, and it makes me really worried and sad. So although I use it every day, I really wish it wasn't a thing. We just don't know what's real or not anymore. And I think that captures that ambivalence that's going on, because we kind of, there's almost a guilt attached to using it quite often, and you know that it's not particularly good, but my God, it's quick. Or you know it's going to lie to you, and you know, with the confidence of an estate agent who's trying to sell you a flat that has damp, but it's not really damp, honestly, it's just a feature wall. It's that kind of confidence. And yet, we still go ahead and do it. Now, for the next bit, this is where the game comes in. So, we asked people to rate their feelings towards AI. We gave them a bunch of things and people and objects, and we said, give us a popularity, how you would rate their popularity. So we're going to play a game here. When we asked people to rate their feelings towards AI, 29% felt positive about it, and 39% felt negative about it. You don't get to have a don't know in this game, it's just positive or negative. So we're going to play the game higher or lower, which to anyone my age is also play your cards right, right? So basically, if you're below that age, don't worry, which is higher or lower. So what we're going to do is, I'm going to give you a person or a thing, and you're going to shout higher if you think it's higher, and lower if you think it's lower. So AI, let's go back again for 1 second. AI sits at 29% positive, right? When I ask you, do you think King Charles III is higher than AI or lower? Which do you think it is, higher or lower?
Higher.
Higher, okay. Seemed to be pretty much unanimous, higher. I can confirm. King Charles III, 47% of people are positive and only 19% negative. So he wins the popularity contest with AI. Okay. The M1 motorway. I don't know how familiar you are with the M1 motorway. If you're from Northern Ireland, you can substitute the M1 in Northern Ireland for your motorway. It won't make a difference. Okay, M1 motorway, higher or lower?
Higher.
Oh, that was a bit more mixed. Okay, if you think it's higher, go yay.
Yay.
If you think it's lower, go yay. Okay, it is in fact lower. So, I know, right? So the M1 motorway, only 19% of people were positive about the M1, the poor M1, and 13% negative about it. Okay, I think this one is probably going to be easy. Donald Trump. Higher or lower?
Lower.
Donald Trump was indeed lower. Donald Trump scored 68% negative, right? 19%, 14% positive. Yeah, I mean, that was a kind of an easy one, really. But, you know, if you're AI, you can take that as a win. Okay. Pope Leo the 14th. Ooh. Higher? Higher? Same-ish. So, that was an interesting one. So, Pope Leo also, people were 29% positive, which is a match for AI, but the Pope is less negative at 12%. So that'll be the Protestants. It's making him not go any higher. So he's less negative, but the same amount of positive. The NHS, higher or lower? I mean, we all love to bitch about the NHS, but the NHS is, of course, a wonderful thing. So yes, it was higher. It was scored really some solid 63% and only 13% negative. So I think that's probably to be expected. Now, the NHS is an interesting one. You hear lots of stories about how there'll be lots of investment in the NHS with AI, and it's going to be great. And AI is really good for healthcare in some cases, right? It has some good purposes in diagnostic imaging. It's not perfect, but it has its uses. And yet the NHS, if you talk to anyone about their IT system, they will just rant at you for 5 hours and cry. So, you know, bring in the AI, but maybe fix the Windows 2000 machines first. Okay, this one surprised me. Which way did it surprise me? Oh, I don't know, that's for you to guess. Wind turbines, higher or lower?
Higher.
Higher, yeah, but you're all the nice lot. Yeah, you see, you all welcome the green technology. Wind turbines have been monstered by the tabloids for years, so I was quite surprised. I thought we were going to get a wind turbines evil thing, you know, Ed Miliband over there in East Anglia doing things with green energy. But no, it scored higher. Okay. Andrew Mountbatten, Windsor, higher or lower? Right, okay, so obviously he was the lowest scoring of everything, as he should be. So he only scored 7% positive and 71% negative. So yeah, not particularly surprising. All right, let's go to a different example of human behavior. So David Attenborough, higher or lower? Of course David Attenborough is higher. The man is as close to a national treasure as we had. 78% positive, 5% negative. Who are the 5% that are saying negative things about David Attenborough? I think we need to find them and shame them publicly. Just checking what time I have left. Okay, and then this one. World of Techno, higher or lower? Highest ever, but only I was asked. So that was just my EMF love for World of Techno. I just felt I had to put him in there. If you've not yet met him, go and find him. I'm gendering him. I have a whole thing on gendering robots, but that was last year's talk. Go find him, kick him for a walk, he's brilliant. Okay, enough of my higher and lower. That was thank you all for playing. What does all this mean? This is where the slides get a bit texty and I have to really peer at them. So when I put this into PowerPoint, PowerPoint's design decided that it would give me a sad looking robot, and rightly it should. So this is my sad robot contemplating what all this means for AI. The companies that build the technology tend to assume that if people are familiar with it, they will like it more, and that's not what's happening. Access to AI does not automatically translate into regular use. So people have access, despite what the government is worried about, the skills are there, they are still choosing not to use it or to limit their use of it. A rejection of AI is not just due to lack of skills. One of the things that came out of this, we ran a round table alongside this, and one of the things that kept coming up was this idea of AI as tools and the definition of it, because when AI becomes infrastructure, which it is an infrastructure, and it's built into everything, and it's built into welfare systems, and into borders, and into workplaces, and into schools, and into hospitals, it stops being used by us, and it starts being used on us. And that was the thing that's really worrying. Opting out can become difficult or impossible. And 70% of people thought that they couldn't avoid, 70% of people said it would be difficult or impossible to avoid being exposed to AI even if they wanted to. 70%. So if you can't avoid it, how can you meaningfully consent to its use? I think we've got huge questions here because it's being baked into everything, right? It's at the top of the search bar. You know, when you search something online, you're getting an AI summary, which is quite often wrong. It's in your phones. It's asking you if you want to change your images, like it's Stalin airbrushing figures out of existence. My God, the power. You know, it's there. It's always on. It's always around us. How can we choose not to use it if it's being forced upon us? There are really big questions around this, I think. So what do we do? Is there actually hope? Yes, there is. We do have some power. We're up against huge tech companies. And I'm not a tech negative person. I'm not anti-AI. I work with people who are very anti-AI. I hold the same nuanced views as some of the people in the survey. But I think we should have better control of it, and we should be able to consent to it. So the first good bit of news this year was that the government back down on their plan so far. We'll see if it sneaks into the back door. But they've backed down on this idea that they'll just give our copyright to tech companies through this model where we can opt out if we don't want that to happen, which would have been unworkable, really. If you imagine every person who's ever written anything having to individually contact a tech company and say, take my work out of your training model, out of your training data. So they've backed down. They had those 11,250 responses, which they then asked if they could have permission to use AI to analyze. They got those responses, and they very clearly felt the weight of it. I mean, it helped that Paul McCartney was, you know, going to Downing Street and telling them not to do that. You've got national treasures on your side, on the side of good. We've seen a lot of stuff, a lot of protests around data centers, and it's starting to have an impact. People are able to halt the progress of these data centers. And I've seen it locally myself. I live in Norwich. And recently there was a, recently on all the community groups, there was a notice went out about they're going to build a data center nearby in Keswick. And before even anyone knew what it was for, whether it was an AI one or not, you know, there's other data centers in the area, immediately, lots of different disparate community groups were all going, well, we have to stop this. And people were getting really, really active about protesting it. And I think that kind of gives me hope that there's collective action to do this. But it doesn't have to be collective. It can be individual as well. I have a PhD student who works on everyday resistance, on individual resistance, on the choices we make around what we use. I won't make AI images, not just because I think they look like piss. I mean, they're really awful. But I don't make AI images. I occasionally use LLMs. You know, I've got 500 words. I want to turn it into 200. I feel guilty the whole time, but I do it. I think you have to make your choices. It's a bit like fast fashion. Says me, but I'm wearing sequins from the charity shop, I'll have you know. And they really itch. there's things like in the Super Bowl recently, there was an ad for Flock, which is basically with teaming up with Ring Doorbell to create a surveillance network that the police could tap into on smart doorbells. Rightly so, people were a bit horrified by this. Although people have had these Ring doorbells for a while, I'm surprised they haven't noticed that it doesn't just surveil what's around you, it surveils you going in and out of your home as well. But, you know, it's good, there's a backlash. It's lawsuits, it's class actions against tech companies over things like copyright, or over things like people being harmed because they've been vulnerable and there's been a horrible negative spiral that they've got into and they've ended up taking their own lives. So there are things happening, there are people pushing back. And the big thing we have in our favor is our consumer power, because they're out to make money, make no mistake, and they're not making any. Like, tech companies are all running at huge losses. They're promising. You see it in their advertising. They're promising artificial general intelligence. They still haven't defined what they mean by artificial general intelligence. They keep shifting the goalposts. But they're so counting on investment. And if we as consumers push back and say, we don't want that bit. And the one argument I hear all the time is people say, well, it's going to happen anyway. You've got to get on board. No, they want you to think that. They want you to think that. That is a narrative of technological determinism that we can choose to reject. It doesn't have to be like that. So when we were just to wind up, when we were releasing our survey results, it coincided with the launch of the AI Resist List, which is a, sort of a collective set up by a number of different groups, including Karen Howe, who wrote The Empire of AI. And they've just got together ways of, they're not trying to get rid of AI, they're not huge, you know, it's not anti-AI, it's more anti the power disparity, it's more anti the influence of big tech without a say in it. And so they've formed a, they've got a website where you could, if you're interested, you can go and have a look at that. And they were looking for somewhere to do a launch in the UK, and I was able to find them a room at my university. And they said, came along and did, we all did some like little lightning talks around this and around the different ways that people can try and shape AI to help them, to benefit society, right? Why are we trying to fit society into AI's mold? Why are we not trying to get AI to fit with us? That would make much more sense. So I think my time is pretty much up, but I just want to finish off by saying, if you do want to read our survey, this is just the initial findings. We're going to publish a full academic paper on it, but there's a QR code there that will link you to the survey. And that was done with my two PhD students, Dylan and Oriane, and with Professor Jack Silgo from UCL. And it's just been, it's been really interesting, and we want to hear from people as well. We want to know more. We want to try and understand this sort of mixed reaction to it, because there is a pushback, but it's not just a rejection of AI. It's a rejection that's tied up in many different things. It's a rejection about feeling powerless. This is, AI is no longer just a technology. It's a whole geopolitical thing. It starts at the raw materials, and it runs right through to that data that's being turned over and generated. And we need to find a way of making it our own. And there's nothing wrong with pushing back so that we can shape it the way that we want to. Thank you very much.